We're discussing prison communication on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. According to the Prison Policy Initiative, which studies it across America, people in prison in Wisconsin are charged different rates for phone calls depending on where they are incarcerated. But what is consistent is the burden for incarcerated people and their families to hear from one another, especially those from low-income backgrounds. Do you have a family member or a loved one who is in prison? What is it like to communicate with them? What are the costs of phone calls? How have you stayed in touch in the pandemic? It's 800-642-1234. Wanda Bertram is communication strategist for the Prison Policy Initiative. Wanda, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi there. It's good to be here.
Good morning. Start us out with a tour of the communication, if you will. What are the most typical ways families communicate and interact with a loved one in prison?
Well, I'm giving a different answer to this question during the pandemic than I've ever given before, because since COVID-19, it's really changed. Mm-hmm. It used to be quite common for people to go visit their folks in prison in person. Right, you could go and you could have a visit over, you know, between glass. Sometimes you could even have, you know, an in-person visit with no glass, right, where you can actually give that person the hug. But like so many things, in-person visits have been taken away during the pandemic, and that has that's forced people to adopt more of the other options for communicating while they're inside. So those include writing letters to your incarcerated loved one, making a phone call. And in some jails and prisons, there are other technologies like video calling or email on kiosks or tablets. So we don't really know how well those technologies work yet.
Yeah, I mean, email has only, I understand, recently started being used in some prisons. I mean, when you look at the prolific use of email in our everyday communications, our inboxes filling up now, how widespread is prison email?
Yeah, well, the first thing you're going to want to know about prison communication of all kinds is that there are private companies involved in all of it. So the reason that we have email in prison to begin with is because there are some really big companies that started out, I think, in the 1990s, getting contracts with prisons and jails to provide phone calls. Now, you mentioned at the top that it costs a fair amount of money to call a loved one in jail. And, you know, that's actually more true in Wisconsin than almost anywhere else. We did a survey of the costs that families have to pay to keep in touch with their loved ones in jails. And we found that the costs in Wisconsin jails can be as high as almost $1 a minute, higher than most other states. So these companies are benefiting from that. Oftentimes they're kicking back some of the revenue to the jails themselves. And the very same companies, you know, in the last few years, as we and other organizations have been putting pressure on the FCC and on states to cap those rates, right, so that families don't have to pay those kinds of rates, those companies have been, you know, diversifying as companies do, and they've been moving into other communications technologies. Right now, they're offering video calls and they're offering emails, which your question was about. So this is how you get other kinds of communications technologies in prison. It's because a company is trying to make a buck.
Wanda, what does research reveal about people who get regular, continual, consistent communication while incarcerated?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. So there have been a number of studies done. Some of them have been done by nonprofits. A couple of them have been done by departments of corrections across the country. And what they all find is that people that are able to keep in touch with their families and their friends while they're incarcerated do way better after they're released. Now, that's probably not a big surprise, right? Mm-hmm. Both because people, you know, can maintain the connections with someone that might be able to get them a job or get them a connection to a place to live after they're released, right? Might be able to help them get back on health insurance. And also because if you don't have that connection to your family and friends, life in prison becomes even more hopeless, right? And people's mental state, becomes even worse than you can already expect it is because they're incarcerated.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Wanda Bertram from the Prison Policy Initiative, an advocacy group for criminal justice reform. We're looking at communication channels in prison and the high cost. What questions do you have about how people communicate with loved ones who are in prison? Do you have a family member who is incarcerated? What is your communication like with them? Join in at 800-642-1234. Wanda, the ability to speak frankly with your attorney without the threat of being monitored, that is a really key part of the attorney-client privilege. Can you explain how legal communication between attorneys and inmates is protected here in Wisconsin and elsewhere?
Well, you know, there's a, like you mentioned, everyone has a, you know, attorney-client privilege, which means that you're supposed to be able to have your phone calls with your lawyer protected, right? Not spied on or surveilled by prison administrators and or given to prosecutors. You're not supposed to have people reading your legal mail. Unfortunately, we don't really know how much that right actually exists in practice, because people in prison often, very often, do have their legal mail read by prison staff, and they unfortunately often do have their communications with their lawyers recorded. I want to stress that, you know, unfortunately, this is something that the involvement of private companies has made even more common, because these companies are actually taking their technology to prisons and going, you know, with our new phone system or with our new video calling technology, you can record any of the stuff that you want. And there's been some action, you know, in the states and in Congress to remedy that. But, you know, it's still a big problem.
I would also assume the problem would be also in exchanging confidential emails, if emails does exist between attorneys and their clients.
100%. You know, if I can, you know, be a little nerdy for a second here. It used
Please.
To be that, you know, okay, good. I'm glad that's welcome on this show. It used to be that, you know, video calls and phone calls, you know, you do those physically at a station. You know, and that's still the case in many prisons, where you'll go to a different place for a phone call or for a video call or for an email. But increasingly, what some prisons are doing is they're offering all of these communication, options on a single piece of technology, a tablet computer. And I think what goes along with that is an increased ease. Of course, an ease of a convenience for the incarcerated person, right, who can have that tablet with them, but also an ease for the Department of Corrections administrators and officials to gather and, you know, keep that data and recordings from someone's communications in one place.
Mm. Let's take a call on this now. Phil is joining us from Bayfield County. Phil, what is your story?
Hi. Yeah, just a quick comment is that I have a relative in prison, and when he makes a phone call to us, if we pick up and get disconnected at any point, he's charged the entire rate of the call. And I wish I had those numbers for you for the cost. But yeah, even if we pick up for a second and get disconnected, he can't call us back and he's charged.
Wow. Wanda, what is this practice like?
Yeah, Phil, I just want you to know that it happens to a lot of people. That's something that I've heard anecdotally from a lot of folks with loved ones inside. It's horrible. I mean, people think when they think about, you know, phone and video calls in prisons that, you know, this is cutting edge technology, just like we're using right now for me to call into this show. It's not. The technology is very poor, and there's customer exploitation built into every single part of it. So whether it's a phone call or a video call, if you get disconnected, you're going to be paying that full amount, and oftentimes you can't get a refund.
We're talking with the Prison Policy Initiative, urging the federal government to address unfair practices in the correctional phone industry. Wanda Bertram is with this group for criminal justice reform. Are you an attorney who has to communicate with clients who are incarcerated? Is there enough privacy? Is it safeguarded? Are you a guard? What do you witness? Are there ways to improve communication for inmates? Join in any point, 800-642-1234. We'll get back to this in a minute with Wanda Bertram here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing communication for people who are incarcerated here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Recently, the advocacy group, the Prison Policy Initiative, it filed comments with the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, explaining what the agency should do to lower phone costs for people in jail and address practices in the correctional phone industry. What have you paid to talk on the phone with a loved one in prison? Have the costs gone up or stayed the same over time? What do you think of Connecticut becoming the first state to make all prison phone calls free? Should Wisconsin follow suit? Join in 800-642-1234. Wanda Bertram is spokesperson for the Prison Policy Initiative with us for about 8 more minutes. So, Wanda, a law going into effect in Connecticut a year from now will make calls from prison free for the inmates and their families. Inmates will get like 90 minutes of phone calls at no charge. What do you think of this law being first in the nation?
I mean, I think it's a huge victory for, for incarcerated people and their families, of course, but really for this entire country. You know, as we were talking about before the break, people that are able to communicate with their loved ones while they're incarcerated do a lot better after they're released. But unfortunately, you know, the presence of private companies and, you know, the kind of self-interested actions of people in the prison system trying to rake in revenues for the prison system have driven the cost of phone calls way up, so that people are kind of barred from keeping in contact that way that helps them after their release. So this bill in Connecticut, this new law, is going to be a huge step forward, and I really hope that other states follow suit.
Yeah. Do you see any traction there? Is there anything that's happening in other states that would follow Connecticut?
Well, there's a lot of progress being made in the states. Not all of it is happening through legislation. We have been working very hard with certain states' utilities boards. So, you know, in California with the Public Utilities Commission, in Iowa with the Iowa Utilities Board, we had some big victories recently with both states agreeing to cap the cost that companies can charge people to make a phone call, and also restricting the amount that companies can charge for ancillary fees. If you've ever made a phone call to a loved one who's incarcerated, you know the deal with the fees. There's fees for everything. It's like using a shoddy debit card. Everything comes with a fee. So, you know, this momentum is building in the states, and, you know, we like to see states address this with legislation, but however we can get it done, we'll get it done.
Looking more closely here in Wisconsin, and you mentioned that Wisconsin being among the most expensive in the nation for phone calls, can you tell us more about what you found and your study?
Absolutely. Yeah, so our study had to do with local jails, which I wanted to say right off the top, local jails and state prisons are different. The cost of a phone call tends to be lower in state prisons because they have slightly more sophisticated people doing their contracting, negotiating with the companies. But in local jails, where we did our survey, we found that the cost of a 15-minute phone call can be as high as about $14.77. That's almost a dollar a minute. So imagine spending a dollar a minute to talk to somebody that you love, and think about how much that would hurt your ability to communicate with them, or maybe hurt your ability to do other things, right? There was an investigation that followed our study in the Appleton Post-Crescent, where the reporter interviewed somebody who has a loved one in prison. And what she said was, I don't know anyone who has an incarcerated loved one who doesn't work more than one job. So this is, I think that should really just spell out to people how much of a financial burden this is putting on folks.
Do you find when you look at the numbers long term, are the cost of calls just going up and up, or have they plateaued at all?
No, in fact, in Wisconsin, in some counties, they've gone down since we've done our study. There are some sheriffs that reached out after the Post-Crescent story to correct us and say, no, since you did that survey a couple months ago, we've brought our rates down. But I think people really just need to keep the perspective in mind, right? A company or a jail can say, we've brought the rates down, and yet families are still paying hundreds of dollars a month for phone calls. And that's why these bills to make calls free are so important.
Phone calls aside, how much access do people in prison have to communication supplies like paper and pens or computers?
Yeah, well, you know, I'll tell you something that some people might not know, which is that if you're found to have too much paper, right, or a number of pens in excess of what's technically allowed in the prison, that's contraband, right? That is a disciplinary infraction that can get you, you know, put in solitary confinement, or can get good time credits docked off your sentence. So that can really hurt you. That dampens people's ability to keep those materials. That said, you know, you can write a letter to folks on the outside, although I hear in Wisconsin that that's you know, the DOC is considering restricting that a little bit more.
And there is a national trend toward photocopying all personal mail to inmates and shredding the original mail. We've heard Fox Lake Correctional Institution is trying this practice, and it might be more of a statewide push. What can you tell us there?
Yeah. Well, you know, like you said, it's a trend. In Pennsylvania a few years ago, they stopped giving incarcerated people the original copies of letters and cards from home. And instead, they shredded those versions and they would give them photocopies or scans of the mail on a you know, some kind of digital interface. Of course, we suspected that a private company was involved, and of course it was. There's a company called Smart Communications that's based out in Florida, to which people in Pennsylvania now have to send their letters. And the company will then scan the letters and then send the scans up to the Pennsylvania prisons. So this was the first major contract that this company got with the prison system. Since then, I have seen legislators from Pennsylvania lobbying the Federal Bureau of Prisons to do the exact same thing. We're now seeing the Bureau of Prisons considering an expansion of mail scanning in those federal prisons, and an increasing number of states are looking at that as well.
Why scan the mail in the first place?
You know, I can't tell you that, actually. You know, I don't want to just repeat the talking point of the Department of Corrections staff, which is that there's, you know, a big influx of drugs in the mail, because sometimes that claim gets made and then it is later debunked, right? In Washington State, where I actually grew up, the DOC claimed that there were all these, you know, drugs being hidden in books. So they said no more sending books to the prison system. Then the Seattle Times did an investigation. Turns out that was bad data. So I don't want to just repeat the talking point of a prison, but I do know that, you know, overdoses in prisons are a serious danger, right? If drugs are coming into a prison facility, that's a serious problem that someone needs to do something about. And I think, unfortunately, prisons will reach for for scanning mail as a reflexive solution to that, even though there are other ways of dealing with this problem.
We're talking with the Prison Policy Initiative, which published a study about the cost of phone calls in prison. We have Wanda Bertram, who's communication strategist for the organization. Let's go to Monica now in Ashland. Hi, Monica. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to say that it's horrible how much we're charged to communicate telephone-wise with, you know, our loved ones that are in jail. We can't write them letters. We can only write a postcard. I don't know if it's because, you know, it's too much money for staff to go through these, or I just kind of overheard you were talking about drugs being sent to the jails through letters. But the burden that is placed on the family members to be able to communicate to, you know, their inmates is ridiculous. We get charged to put money on their canteen so that they can make these phone calls without us setting up an account with Securus. It's really difficult to get through to Securus and set up accounts and do those types of things, especially, you know, for low-income people. If you don't have internet access, it's hard.
Yeah.
And, you know, my kid is being charged on a daily basis to be incarcerated. So he's racking up thousands of dollars in fines and incarceration, and he's just digging himself a deeper hole, and there's no way that I can even send him a lifeline to pull him out of it because I can't afford to do that.
Oh, Monica, thank you for sharing your story. Wanda, what can you tell Monica?
Well, you know, first, obviously, none of this is your son's fault, and then none of this is your fault, right? That's, you know, whether your son's been sentenced or not, being exploited is not part of the sentence, but that's exactly what happens in prison communications, right? For people listening to the show, Monica mentioned Securus. Now, Securus is one of the biggest companies that's operating in prisons and jails. They're basically the Comcast of prison and jail communications, and they're coming in and they're striking up these deals with prisons and jails, that that set these really high rates, and they force people to pay really high costs to stay in touch with their loved ones. And it's all I can say, Monica, is I'm very sorry that you're going through this.
We only have a second or two left. Any tips for families?
Well, you know, I would keep an eye on what your state is doing and what the FCC is doing, because we are fighting very hard to get this, to change this. We're fighting at the national level, trying to get the Federal Communications Commission to regulate the cost of these calls and bring down the caps on how much a call can cost. And we're also working with state utilities boards and legislatures to get those same solutions actually passed on a state level, because sometimes it can take a long time to get things done nationally. So, you know, watch what your state is doing, watch what the FCC is doing, and bring the pressure on your legislator too, right? If you're listening and you think this is a problem, call your legislator and tell them what you think. You know, we can make a difference here if we get together.
Wanda, thank you for joining us. Wanda Bertram, communication strategist for the Prison Policy Initiative. News is next.